Soccer World Cup hasn't started yet, but a winner has already emerged. Adidas just taking a 12-10 lead against arch rival Nike in a race to kit out most of the team. The German sportswear brand is fighting back after Nike sponsored more teams in the last 2014 tournament in Brazil. This year, Adidas is supplying shirts for 12 out of 32 countries.
Thai police say their country's become a dumping ground for Asia's old electronics. They put 150 tons of high-tech trash on display this week. Officials say most of the old computers, crushed game consoles and scrap have been coming in since China cracked down on its own imports of what's called e-waste.
How do you pass the time when you're pretending to be dead? According to Russian journalist Arkady Babchenko, who staged his own murder on Tuesday, take refuge in a morgue, change your clothes and watch yourself on the news. Speaking at a press conference on Thursday, Babchenko described how he'd used pig's blood, makeup, and an ambulance driver who was in on the secret, explaining it was part of a special Ukraine operation to thwart a Russian plot to kill him and 29 others.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Friday. It's June 1st, and it's 5:10 in the morning. We're happy you're here with us for another edition of The Opening Bell and another business day. Hey, it's the start of another month as well. Welcome to it on the broadcast today. We're going to have a conversation a little bit later on with Brian Summers of Skift.com, our regular Friday talk with Brian. We're going to be talking about CEO salary. Where do the CEOs of, let's say, United and Delta fall in line with their peers? And how does that compare to what the average line worker makes at the airline? That's Brian coming up at 5:40 this morning. Paul Nolte is in the house this morning as well. The jobs report is coming out. We'll bring in Paul momentarily. But first, on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, futures are pointing toward opening gains later this morning on Wall Street. Dow futures are up 126. NASDAQ futures are up about 24. S&P futures up about 13. Around the globe this morning, markets in Europe generally in the green, all positive. The FTSE is up almost a full percent. The DAX is up more than a percent. The CAC in France up almost a percent and a quarter. And in Asia, markets are mixed. The Nikkei is going to close down about 30 points. Everything else looks like it's going to remain in the positive area today. Oil is at $66.93 a barrel, which is down about 11 cents. The Trump administration's decision to slap tariffs on its top allies could weaken Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross's hand as he travels to China to try to fend off a trade war. That, at least, is the view of many longtime trade analysts and China watchers. Briefing reporters on the administration's decision to slap tariffs on imported steel from Canada, Mexico, and the European Union, Ross said he would leave today for Beijing for negotiations aimed at resolving the dispute over China's aggressive attempts to change U.S. technological supremacy. But the tariffs that were imposed on our allies, Europe, Mexico, and Canada, have now resulted in the retaliation of those countries, at least by Canada and by Mexico. Lots of goods are on the table to be taxed by those countries. So we could end up seeing prices go up on some of those things here in the United States. Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau says he's offered to come to Washington to talk with the president about this. And not only the tariffs, but the ongoing renegotiation of the North American Free Trade Agreement. Let's begin there with Paul Nolte this morning. Paul is a senior VP and portfolio manager over at Kingsview Asset Management in Chicago. Paul, good morning. Welcome to Friday. Welcome to the Showcase Studio. We thought we would do our last broadcast in Tribune Tower from down here. It's nice to see you way over there.
This is a nice spot. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
good morning.
Good morning. We get to see other people walking by and daylight for a change. So,
welcome to June.
Let's talk about these tariffs. Your initial thoughts after what you saw yesterday?
You know, we've been talking about tariffs now for the past 2 months or so, and we can go back to when Trump was on the campaign trail. That was one of the things that he had been talking about all along, was that if he were elected, he would be putting these tariffs in place because he felt that the U.S. was being taken advantage of. So in a lot of ways, what we're seeing is the result of him following through on his campaign promise. That being said, from an economic perspective and from a global trade perspective, tariffs are not really a good idea. It's something that really there is a huge benefit for countries to work on trade and allow their goods and services to be sent around the world easily. Now, certainly a lot of countries do put tariffs on certain products to defend some of their own goods and services. And that's something that the U.S. has historically done, as well as other countries. So how this all works out is going to be difficult to assess, and we won't really see the impacts of this for a few months. We're seeing some already in the fact that we've seen higher prices for aluminum and steel, and that's coming through in some of the consumer staples like Campbell Soup. Mm-hmm. Wilbur Ross, remember, had his had the Campbell Soup can up and saying, you know, it's going to cost an extra penny or so. Campbell Soup is saying, no, it's going to be a little bit more than that. So we're going to see impacts to higher prices here in the United States for a lot of different goods and services.
Well, probably to washers and dryers and even cars, right?
Absolutely. So anything that's using steel and aluminum, and they were talking about tariffs on cars as well. One of the interesting things is because we are such a global economy, Alcoa has a huge plant in Canada. Mm-hmm. And so here's a U.S. company that's going to get taxed, have an additional tariff on their goods that are coming into the United States.
I heard some folks yesterday saying what you said about the China part of this, or the trade part of this, that Trump had campaigned for some of this, but he campaigned against China, not our allies, who seem to be caught up in all of this now.
Yeah, you know, again, what is interesting about what we're seeing here is, and this has been indicative of the week in general, what we've seen from the marketplace in general, we're never quite sure where anybody is standing in the administration on anything at any given moment, and it's subject to change. So for what we are looking at today could be very different next week, next month. We've changed policies a couple different times on some of these trade tariffs. You know, he walked back. Originally, he said, we're going to put the trade tariffs on China, walked back from it and said, okay, we're going to exempt these countries. Now we're coming back to maybe not exempting those countries. So as with anything with the administration, it's a work in progress, and we're never quite sure where they stand at any given moment.
Right, right. Are there buying opportunities for investors here?
I think there are, and I do think actually it's in the consumer staple area. You know, it is the worst part of the market year to date. The staples sector is down 15-20%. Some stocks are down as much as 30%. Campbell Soup is a great example. It was 50%. It's now in the 30s. They're not going away. Their costs are going higher. Their margins are going to come down a little bit. But I think you're looking at companies now that have gone on sale. So I think you could do a little bit of homework on those companies, take a look at them. But I think it's probably a good time to start slowly accumulating some shares in those types of companies.
Paul, hang on. We're going to come back and we'll dive into the jobs report. It is Jobs Report Friday. We'll get into that with Paul Nolte.
From ABC News Wall Street Now, stocks could see a bounce today with a new round of data due out on jobs. It could signal how many times the Federal Reserve Board could hike interest rates for the remainder of the year. Talks of a trade war getting real. The White House now hitting steel and aluminum imports with tariffs. A Cleveland auto parts supplier says the higher price for imported steel has already cost the company a contract. And Mexico says it will put its own tariffs on American products like steel, fruit, and cheese. The National Association of Realtors says pending home sales fell 1.3% in April, the group blaming a lack of homes on the market. But more people are buying at Costco. The warehouse club says stronger sales helped drive up profits 7% in the last quarter. Walmart now offering something new, Shop by Text. The program called Jet Black allows customers to place orders through text messages with same-day delivery in some cases. The service will cost $50 a month. Michelle Franzen, ABC News.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Welcome back to the program. We're on this morning with Paul Nolte of Kingsview Asset Management in Chicago. It is Jobs Report Thursday, Paul. What is your number?
181,000. 500.
Did I just say Thursday?
Yeah, you did.
Jobs report Friday.
We're on Friday, yes.
The whole week has been messed up because of the holiday. And then wages is going to be the other part of this, too.
Wages, I think, will be maybe 0.2. And so we're looking at a year-over-year rate, which I think is a little bit more indicative of where wages are headed than the month-to-month, which tends to be pretty noisy. I would say we're looking at probably 2.7, 2.8 on an annual basis. And again, still on the lower side of where they probably should be, or many economists think they ought to be based on what we're seeing from a 3.9% unemployment rate, and jobs growth as strong as what we're seeing.
I know I ask you this every time the jobs report comes out, but how many months can we go with seeing 200,000, 190,000 jobs? At some point, I mean, if we're at full employment, does that number, when does that number start really coming down?
There's, we're seeing a lot of people coming in off of the sidelines. There's still a lot of people that have not worked or worked below their what they would like to be able to do, so they're taking a job just to take a job, so they're called underemployed. So those numbers, I think, are still fairly high, and as all of this evidence comes out that, hey, the jobs situation's pretty good, you start to see a lot of people coming in off the sidelines. We could see this probably last for another 6 to 12 months if it were to continue at this pace.
We in the most recent season of earnings, lots of companies paying dividends, big time dividends, but the wage growth should be higher. At some point, are they going to turn some of this money around on the workers?
You know, that it goes back to the textbook. The textbook says, you know, the company operates for the shareholders, and so the shareholders would like to see higher margins, obviously better revenue and good earnings. Well, that higher margins comes at the expense of workers. So if I'm looking at expanding, I'm looking to try to do it as cheaply as I can. And it's part of the reason why with the tax cut that we saw, a lot of the companies were not paying out higher wages, but they were making bonuses. So we'll pay you a $5,000 bonus. We'll, you know, do whatever. Because that's not something that I have to do every year. If I increase your wage from $20 an hour to $22 an hour, I'm on the hook for that, and it's going to stay that way. It's very rare that I'm going to have to cut that. So by paying the bonus, I'm not on the hook for making that change, and I can keep my margins relatively high because of that. So that has been a big shift in corporate thinking really since the 80s when we started taking a look at compensation and we take a look at the way companies are run. Part of the reason why we're seeing a lot more companies higher in debt than they normally would be, again, because the textbooks would say, you know, debt's a good way to go. It's tax deductible. It doesn't cost shareholders, and it's a way to expand the business in a cheap fashion.
I got lost in a time warp yesterday watching CNBC and Bloomberg and Fox Business for about an hour. Couldn't get out of it, and they were one of the analysts there said that companies are also feeling a little I don't want to say nervous. But they don't want to put a huge investment going forward because they think a recession might be coming next year.
Yeah, and that's indicative too of the all the trade talk and there's a nervousness about the political environment in Washington as well as around the world. We're seeing a little bit more of a populist movement around the world. So a lot of companies are playing it very close to the vest. What's interesting, though, is they've been doing that for the last 8 years. Yeah. There really has not been this spending spree that we normally see coming out of recessions. So it's been a very quiet, slow build. And that's part of the reason why this rally in the market that we've had, this bull market really since March of 2009, has been one that many have called the most hated bull market in history, because it has come so unusual with federal intervention in the bond market, zero interest rates, negative interest rates in Europe, lack of spending by companies, and a consumer that really has been okay, but really hasn't participated too much. So it's a very different type of recovery. And we've always been worried about a recession coming up. in each of those years, because we've never seen that 4 or 5% growth that we normally see coming out of a recession that would spur that type of spending.
What was the economic data that caught your attention this week that was the most important?
You know, the PCE number yesterday, because it's the one that the Fed really watches, and that's the personal consumption indicator, and that is their inflation watch. And that one actually ticked down a little bit. So again, below their 2% target. There is still room for the Fed to say, you know, we're going to hold off. There's been comments from many of the Fed officials saying we're going to allow the economy to run a little hot, meaning we're going to have inflation above our 2% target for a while before we're really aggressive about raising interest rates. So that is a signal to the bond market, especially, that the Fed is not going to be as aggressive as they originally thought about raising rates. So probably two more rate increases, June for sure, this month, and then probably September, and we'll see if the data doesn't improve by September, they may be done for the year.
Paul, what else do you like here at the end of the week?
You know, at the end of the week, we're still looking at the international market. Yesterday, even though the U.S. market was down, international did very well. The commodity market, we think, will be doing well. We're starting to talk about, you know, maybe not a recession, but we're certainly late in the economic cycle. So commodities should start doing well. We're starting to look at the staples, which is the next step after commodities. And technology is still in its own little world, and the fact that it's growing revenue and doing very well from an earnings perspective. So those are the three sectors really in the U.S. that we like inside the U.S., outside the U.S., certainly emerging markets.
All right, Paul, we always appreciate your insight, and we'll see you again next Friday.
Absolutely.
Paul Nolte from Kingsview Asset Management in Chicago. You can find out more about Paul and his colleagues at kingsview.com.
Hi, this is Jim Dahlke with today's Inno Minute on WGN Radio, a rundown of all the Chicago innovation and tech news you need to know, delivered by ChicagoInno.com. Manifest, the maker of a software that standardizes 401k transfers, won first place and $315,000 at the University of Chicago's prestigious New Venture Challenge. The competition has previously produced successful Chicago startups like Grubhub and Braintree. Outcome Health has added 4 new board members, including LinkedIn exec Mike Gampson, as the company looks to rebound from the fraud scandal that rocked the Chicago tech company last fall. The new board appointments come as Outcome looks to regain credibility following a lawsuit by its investors. And Target, through its online delivery marketplace Shipt, announced it's launching same-day delivery for groceries, essentials, electronics, and other items to customers in Illinois, Wisconsin, Michigan, and Ohio. That's today's Inno Minute from WGN Radio. Learn more at ChicagoInno.com and sign up for The Beat, our daily email newsletter.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning again, everybody. Welcome back to the program. Thanks for being here with us on our Friday edition of The Opening Bell. Our regular Friday conversation with Brian Summers of Skift.com this morning is going to focus on airline CEO pay. Who's on top and who is not. We're also going to talk to Brian a little bit about some new uniforms over at Delta, but let's bring him in from Skift. Now, Brian, let's begin with the CEO part. You've been looking at what the CEOs are paid, who's on top and who's not.
Yeah, I don't think it's any surprise that U.S. airline CEOs make a lot of money. People know that most of the larger U.S. airlines made billions of dollars last year. It's a good time to be in the airline industry. And the CEO who gets paid the most money in the United States among airlines is Ed Bastian over at Delta Airlines. I have to tell you, Steve, Delta is a very well-run airline. Just about everybody thinks so. They carry themselves with confidence. Some people say arrogant. Their customers like them. And Ed Bastian over at Delta made about $13 million last year. And I know that sounds like a lot of money. Actually, it is a lot of money. But if anybody deserves the top spot, it is probably Ed Bastian over at Delta.
How does that compare with, let's say, Oscar Munoz over at our hometown airline, United?
Yeah, I don't know if people remember this, but the prior year, Oscar Munoz was the highest paid U.S. airline executive. And part of that was because he got a bonus when he signed on, but it didn't matter. In 2016, he made about $18 million, which is $5 million more than Ed Bastian over at Delta made last year. Oscar Munoz made a lot of money in 2016, and people will remember that for a variety of reasons, United did not have the best 2017. There was the Dr. Dow incident in Chicago with the dragging, and Oscar probably would have been very close to Ed Bastian over at Delta last year, except he decided and made a big announcement recently that said he would forego his bonus. So Oscar Munoz only at United only made about $9.5 million last year.
Do you have any sense of how big that bonus was that he turned down?
Not off the top of my head, yeah. But it was probably several million dollars.
How does the let's talk about American before we go any further, because those are the three I think most people think about. What about the CEO over at American?
So American CEO took home $12.2 million last year. And I should say that when we talk about how much money these gentlemen make, and they are all gentlemen, it's total compensation. So it's not that they get paid salary. Doug Parker is unusual in that he decided a couple of years ago that he did not want to be paid in cash at all, not a cash bonus and not a cash salary. He gets paid in stock. Airlines are doing very well right now, and Doug Parker is doing very well. But if somehow disaster struck next year and American Airlines lost a couple billion dollars, as people know has happened in the somewhat recent past, Doug Parker would be in trouble. So maybe he deserves the $12 million he made last year.
A lot of people have been making a big deal about how much greater the CEO pay is than, let's say, the median pay for one of the airline's workers over at Delta. Why don't we talk about over at Delta? 142 times greater.
Yeah, you're right. The CEO at Delta made 142 times what the average median salary was. But I have to tell you, Steve, you know, I cover this all the time. The average median salary at Delta Airlines, according to the proxy filing, is $93,000. That's more money than I think most people would expect. It's more money than I expected. So it's not as if Delta is paying its people peanuts and then the CEO is getting paid a lot of money. It seems like everyone's doing okay.
Yeah. How about the bottom of the list there? I think most people might think of Southwest. What about some of the cheaper airlines? Do their CEOs get paid a lot?
You know, by normal people standards, their CEOs get paid a lot. But by CEO standards, they don't necessarily. So Spirit Airlines, they charge for everything. They're a no-frills airline. And their CEO, Bob Farnaro, made about $2.2 million last year. Again, a lot of money, but not anything close to what Delta CEO made. What I find interesting is the median compensation at Spirit Airlines, because Spirit is known for $29 fares and $39 fares and stuff like that. And I guess there's only one way to do that, and it's by paying less to all your vendors and your people. And so the median salary at Spirit Airlines is just $36,000. That's a lot less than the $93,000 that they're paying as a median salary over at Delta.
You mentioned this earlier, Brian, but you know, you look down the list of all these CEOs and their names, and they're all men, as you say, pretty much all men. Why are there not more female CEOs of these airlines?
That's a good question. There should be more female CEOs. There are not a lot of female top executives at airlines either, and people may remember a few weeks ago, JetBlue made a big announcement, so they now have a woman president. She's actually the first woman president, not ever, but currently at a U.S. airline. And, you know, Southwest has Tammy Romo, who's the CFO, who's a woman. But those are just about the only two executives that I could name right now at the executive vice president level and higher.
Brian, let's talk about the Skift Tech Forum that's coming up. There's going to be a segment on this dedicated to airlines, specifically in-flight Wi-Fi. You've been talking to one of the people that will oversee some of this.
This is true. I work for a company called Skift. We're having a tech forum in Silicon Valley in a couple of weeks. We're pretty excited about it. One of the people that I'll be interviewing on stage is Linda Jojo, who's the chief digital officer at United Airlines. And I spoke with her recently to get a bit of a preview. And I admired her honesty. Something that we talked about is just the overall unreliability of in-flight Wi-Fi. It is a little bit easier for airlines to complain about this because, as people may know, airlines don't really run their own internet. They use outside vendors like Gogo and Viasat. So if the system doesn't work, it's generally not United's problems. It's the vendor. But look, Linda Jojo has been working in tech for 20 years or so, and she said, yeah, people forget sometimes what it takes to beam internet to an airplane. She actually told me that there's this thing called physics. That's a direct quote. And just how hard it is to get connectivity in a reliable way to an airplane at 35,000 feet traveling, you know, 550 miles an hour. People don't think of it as a physics problem, right? We're used to having Wi-Fi. We want it to be exactly the same on the plane as it is at home. And she said actually that that may never be possible. We'll get close, but she said, you know, home Wi-Fi is going to keep getting better, and it may not be fair to expect airplane Wi-Fi to get better exactly in the same way.
It's nice to hear, though, they've got people that are thinking about this, and what are they also spending money to try to fix the problem a little bit better?
Yeah, they're trying their best. I think that they invested recently in some new routers. They definitely are pushing their vendors to do a better job, but it's slow going, to be honest. I have to tell you, I fly all the time. Having Wi-Fi is important to me, but I always plan for it not to work, because if you are expecting it to work all the time, you're going to be disappointed.
Brian, there's another story, too, that's happening, and let's go back to Delta Airlines. If people have flown on Delta in the last couple of days, they've probably noticed some new uniforms.
Yes, about 64,000 of Delta workers got new uniforms this week. They are designed by a celebrity fashion designer, and they are apparently passport plum, which is a little bit different. Delta had been had more boring uniforms in the past. They did have some red, but it seems like Delta employees are really excited to wear these uniforms.
I bring this story up because I think it was about a year ago, maybe at this time, maybe a little longer, when they changed the uniforms over to American and we had some scratchy employees. Has Delta learned from that?
Let's hope so. It's only been a few days. It's going to take some time before we know. We know that the employees like the uniforms, but it'll take some time before we know whether there are any allergic reactions or things like that.
Yeah, I love that color, passport plum. I have to put that in my book. All right, Brian, thank you.
Thanks, Steve.
Brian Summers is airline business reporter at Skift. That's skift.com. Make sure you follow Brian on Twitter at Brian Summers and also Skift at Skift.
You're listening to the opening bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, Dow futures are up about 124 points. NASDAQ and S&P futures are higher, too, as we head to the opening bell at 8:30 Chicago time this morning. Time to check in on agriculture and commodities. Orion Samuelson is with us this morning. Good morning, Orion.
Well, good morning to you, Steve. Probably the worst news this week for lovers of French wine. They had tremendous hailstorms in the vineyard areas of France, and thousands of acres of grapes were destroyed. So that may mean higher prices a little bit later on for French wine. So that's my bad news of the morning.
The other part of the bad news this morning is this trade stuff. Mexico, Canada have already announced retaliatory tariffs. Some of the stuff from Canada is agriculture related.
And from Mexico as well. Mexico has hit back with picking on pork legs, apples, grapes, and cheeses, of course, as well as steel. So, yeah, the trading community in the world is continuing to be concerned about probably not a trade war as yet, but certainly a trade battle. And it's beginning to cost some producers in the United States money. For example, National Pork Producers Council this week calling for a swift end to the trade dispute with China, because according to Iowa State University economist Dermot Hayes, U.S. pork producers have lost $2.2 billion on an annualized basis due to events leading up to and following China's 25% punitive tariffs in retaliation for U.S. tariffs on aluminum and steel. So it's something that overhangs not only the industrial market, but certainly the agricultural community, because really, Steve, that's where they can hit back at the United States, and particularly at farmers and ranchers. So I'm hoping we get this thing quieted down and settled, and we'll continue to watch to see what happens.
Is this, Orin, do you think this is an effort by the Trump administration to push the hand of Canada and Mexico on NAFTA? Is that what this is all about?
I think that's part of it, yes. The NAFTA situation, well, I've said it many times, and probably about a month ago, watching world trade agreements get hammered out is like watching paint dry. It takes forever because you've got so many different areas of industry and agriculture in those countries that they're just bouncing back. But, you know, when you look at China and U.S. trade, our trade deficit to China, I can understand why the president wants to get something done on that, because it's huge. And it's going to take some working out. And then the NAFTA deal, I don't think they'll get that done in time to beat the presidential election in Mexico. Mexico had wanted to do that, but I don't think they're going to get it done, because they've still got too far to go to work out agreements on some of the top issues in trade between the three NAFTA countries.
What is on the morning show tomorrow?
Well, tomorrow morning, Jim Fazell will be back with us. We'll be talking gardening, because with the rains this spring, we've slowed down gardening quite a bit. And so Jim will be talking about what to do. Oh, and reminding people to mow the yard, because with all this rain, grass is growing and creating a hay crop instead of a grass crop. So he'll be with us. And, of course, we'll be talking markets as we always do on Saturday morning.
All right, Orin, we'll be listening. Thanks, and have a good weekend.
You too, Steve.
Orin Samuelson, again, the morning show from 5 to 6 tomorrow, right here on 720 WGN. Now the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for Friday, June 1st. It's Jobs Report Friday. U.S. employers thought to have hired at a solid pace in May helped extend some of the economy's nearly nine-year expansion. Economists have forecast as many as 190,000 jobs added last month, the unemployment rate likely remaining at 3.9%, according to data provided by FactSet. We'll be watching for the jobs report at about 7:30 Chicago time.